Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Typically, we're going to be talking to our pal Bernie Miklas on Mondays and Fridays, but we miss Mondays, so we're kind of making one up here. Bernie, welcome back, pal.
Dave, how you doing, man? Good to be with you.
Doing well. So as we spend more time with Bernie, Bernie's a man of many interests, not just sports. We'll kind of get into some of those and have a little more non-sports fun. But today I wanted to start, we'll get into the Cardinals, get into the Blues, Mizzou being ranked number 9. I want to start with an existential question for you and Wheeler. why is it, because we all played sports, we all love sports, you two have made your living out of sports. Why do we love sports so much?
Ooh. In my case, it's a combination of things. Just, you know, having a father that took me to all kinds of games, all kinds of sports, getting involved in Little League and basketball and all at a young age. And then also just sensing things as I've went along, like it's such a family thing. Like we were, my family had a, like we're original Baltimore Colts season ticket holders. And I come from this huge Polish family in Baltimore. So all those great Colts teams with Unitas and Barry and Mackey and all them, we had like three rows of Memorial Stadium, just family members for the entire time the Colts were in Baltimore. So those traditions get built. And then as a sports writer, a sportscaster, I learned firsthand, no matter what town you're in, there's nothing that lifts the morale of a town and gets the people in a good mood and brings everybody together in a unified way, the way a great sports team can do. It's really a tremendous impact.
It's a great answer.
Yeah.
Wheels?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the first thing for me is what Bernie said first. It's always an emotional attachment from when you're a kid. It's whether it's mom, dad, you know, grandfather, family, neighbors, just whatever. There's you've got that element. To me, the super nerd, I love the just the pure competition of how do I beat this person in front of me? Whatever my job is, if I'm an offensive lineman, how do I block this guy? If I'm the catcher, how do I get this hitter out with, you know, how do I help my pitcher get this hitter out? I love that. But I think even broader than all of it is I think there's something to be said about structure. In sports, there's a winner and a loser. The rules are set in advance. The rules are enforced by neutral arbitrators, and you don't get to change the rules in the middle of the game. You don't get to complain and say that it didn't work out the way that you wanted to. I mean, you can, but nobody's going to listen. Everybody's just going to write you off as a sore loser. And I think that structure appeals to a lot of people. I know it appeals to me, where we watch what happens in other parts of the world, what happens on Wall Street, what happens in politics, where if somebody doesn't get the result they want, well, it's the system, it's not me. But in sports, it's pretty clear. If you don't do the job, you didn't do the job. If you lost the game, it's over. You lost. There is no changing it or BSing about it. And if you try to, everybody laughs you off like a kook.
Another good answer. I think that's really true. I think that we have an inherent sense of justice. And sometimes an enhanced sense of justice, and so many things in the world seem unjust and just not fair, and I didn't deserve this. And with sports, when I was sprinting in college, a gun would go off, and 10 or 11 seconds later, someone would cross the line first.
Somebody won.
And that was it. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, Dave, I want to throw one more thing, and this is a little selfish because it's about my career, but If I sat down and like typed out everything that I've been privileged to see, I would forget some extraordinary things, and it would still be a very long list. Like I covered 30 some Super Bowls. I mean, a bunch of world championship heavyweight fights. I was there when Mike Tyson bit off Vander Holyfield's ear. I covered 3 Olympics, all kinds of four or five of the Bulls NBA championships under Jordan. All these great football players, you know, through history. I've been fortunate because of sports to be able to meet people like Nelson Mandela and 3 United States presidents. You know, I mean, I love it for selfish reasons, because where else would I be able to have witnessed all this and meet the people that I've met and write and talk about the things, the extraordinary things I've seen?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a universal language. I always feel legitimately bad there. I've been one of the like kids call me Malibu Dave because I've been so many people and tried on so many outfits. but there are a lot of things I'm not into. You could bring up topics. I'm like, I got nothing for you. And every now and then you'll meet someone that are like, sports means nothing to me. I feel legitimately bad for them because it is a universal language. I've talked many times about being a young, gawky teenager. My dad was a World War II vet. We had nothing to talk about. We had nothing in common. But I remember him burning chicken on the grill while we listened to Buck and Shannon on the do a Cardinals broadcast, and we could talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's meaningful. That's real gritty life.
It bridges gaps.
It really does.
Social gaps. You name it. Cultural gaps. Absolutely. And it's not the only thing. Like, music does that. There are other things, but to me, sports do it as well as anybody else because of what Bernie pointed out, in that it brings you physically together, but also psychologically together.
Yeah.
You know, when the Cardinals are winning a World Series, right, the city's feeling really good.
Yeah, you throw out everything. Religion, no. We're all in one church when it's a team we love and we share that. Politics, nah, it's not polarized. We're all a member of the same party. It's whatever party that team represents in terms of the competition. I mean, where do you live? It doesn't matter. Whatever your zip code is, we all love the same thing. I mean, it's just, how old are you? You know, are you 9 years old? Are you 23 years old? Are you 49 years old? Are you 67 years old? Doesn't matter. Our spirits are aligned.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks for indulging me on that question.
Great question. Let's take it
over and talk to Bernie Miklas about the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton right now, Bernie. I mean, look, they're playing overall pretty well. I mean, what is it now? 9 of the last 13 or 14 that they've won, beating good teams in the mix. They finally got a win against the Brewers last night. That was impressive. Unfortunately, the Braves and the Mets keep winning, which is making the race more difficult. But I really enjoyed your analysis earlier of Paul Goldschmidt, because I think that's one of the more interesting late-season developments that – up until about 5 or 6 weeks ago, he hadn't done much. But since then, he's basically been Paul Goldschmidt. So what do we make of that?
Well, I did a thing. You know, I'm a numbers nerd. You know, his first 3 months of the season through the end of June were really poor. There's just nothing to talk about. They were awful. He's actually been a really good player, really good hitter since the beginning of July. I mean, really good. And then August and September, his numbers are like, if you looked at them and you would say, well, that's the Goldschmidt we saw in 2022. Like I got to confess something here as someone who stays on top of numbers. This resurgence of Goldschmidt, number one, is a real thing. And number two, the magnitude of it is something that I was kind of half asleep on. I didn't realize that he had been gradually just pulling all these numbers up over the last 2+ months. And it's going to give the Cardinals a lot to think about going forward, whether to offer him a contract for 2025. And he's going to have choices too.
Right, right. That's the thing that I wanted to go into with this, because how much should a strong finish, whether it's September, whether it's July through September, how much should a strong finish influence that kind of decision? You know, to put all the things on the table, Goldie's going to be 37 in a week. So you're talking about all of next year, age 37, turning 38 at the end of it. You're talking about paying some money. We don't know exactly how much. I don't know if the market's going to get him what he makes now. Probably not.
What's he make now?
What's he at? 25, 26 right now?
25, something like that.
Yeah. So he's probably not near that next year, no matter where he goes. But, you know, how much of that are you willing to commit on a player that you're still worried about age? I think that's a fascinating. And then also, what are your alternatives if you choose not to bring him back?
Yeah, that's so true. And I, one thing like something like StatCast is really good for is you can see all the indicators that tell you whether a guy is like succumbing to age related decline.
Right. Physical stuff.
The one thing about Goldschmidt is really impressive, even though he was struggling for 3 months. I mean, he's in the top 8% of all major league hitters in terms of hard hit rate. He's in the top 15% of average exit velocity. He's in the top 27% in barrel percentage. And the point being is that all the things you measure to see if he still's got the swing, he still has the juice, he still has the power, he still can drive the ball, hit it hard. All of that stuff is intact with him. Like, in other words, nothing age-related is represented in these metrics. And I think that tells us a lot, just to play devil's advocate.
No, it does. I mean, it tells you that when he hits it, it's the same result as it used to be. So he's not losing strength. He's not losing bat speed. We don't have the bat speed numbers before this year. They're new this year, but he's still well above major league average when it comes to bat speed. Mm-hmm. The things that are harder to measure would be like reaction time. Are you slowing down on reaction time? Eyesight could be getting worse, although we have solutions for that, right? Surgeries and contacts and things. Because what's changed for him, and you've pointed this out before, Byrne, is taking more strikes and swinging at more non-strikes, and that's why his walk rates are down and his strikeout rates are up, and that's really the difference in what he is.
Yeah, I think the plate discipline's the number one issue. I don't think his problems are physical. I think he's a guy that tinkers with his swing all the time, mm-hmm. maybe too much. He just never stops trying to change this, change that, change this, change that. But the thing that's interesting, like, and I alluded to the first 3 months of the season, you know, his strikeout rate was 29%.
Yeah.
You go the last 2 months, it's about 21%. So he's
more
even
normal.
Cleaned that up.
Yeah,
he's cleaned that up.
So with Goldschmidt, we have an out. If we want to let him go respectfully with a pat on the back, we can. How do you handicap a guy like Nolan Arenado, who's making even more money and struggling probably more than Goldschmidt?
I think his whole style of hitting is changing, and I think he's adapting. I think he's now sort of come to grips with the fact that unless he can get a fat pitch that he can pull down the left field line, he's not going to hit. He's not going to come anywhere close to the big home run totals he's had in the past. But we see him at Kevin Wheeler. We see Arenado hitting the right field more.
Yeah.
Being content to just drive the ball up the middle to get a single, to get a run in, hitting for average, you know, doing a really good job of situational hitting. He's been fabulous with runners in scoring position. So it's not so much a power game. He's sort of evolving into a more all-around hitting style. And I think that can make him a productive player just in a different way over the next 2 or 3 years. I really do.
Yeah, and basically what it's going to end up doing, you know, for the team anyway, is you have to just count on him as a different player, right? So you can't say we're going to plug Nolan Arenado into the three hole and he's going to hit 30 home runs for us. They have to plan for him being a different guy because he's back to being a great defender this year. Last year it slipped a bit. This, and I think that was the back problems, but it seems pretty clear.
You think he's a contender for a Gold Glove this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he'll be one of the, he may not get it, but he'll be one of the top two or three, I would think. Right, Ryan?
Certainly be in the conversation. And I have a hard time predicting whether, you know, who the voters and mostly coaches and managers.
Right.
Like who they're going to put in the finalists. I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's there, but I don't think it'd be outrageous if he's not a finalist, but he's had a really good year.
He's back in the conversation. Let's put it that way. Because last year he really mm-hmm. wasn't. And this year he's back in the conversation. So you know that you can always kind of count that barring injury, he's going to be at least above average, if not an excellent defender. So maybe you have to count on the production you're expecting to be more good than great. Which is hard when you're making $35 million a year, but that just means you have to build the roster differently. And that's one thing that we've been talking about. I know you've been writing about it and talking about it, Bernie, and I have too. This kind of comes into how they find and develop players and how you can kind of do what they used to do, which is have those complementary players that can do what you can fill the need that you have as opposed to just be surface level contributors. And one of the needs they're going to have moving forward is going to be finding more power.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And see, the thing, I'm not saying that, you know, Goldschmidt and Arenado having down years for at least most of the year. I'm not saying that's okay. I'm not saying that it's like, well, you can overcome that. But the thing of it is, you know, we get back to Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. The thing of it is, you know, if there was going to be a downturn because of related to age with Goldie and Arenado, you had two guys in the wings that you thought, okay, these guys are going to take center stage.
Exactly.
They're going to be the next core hitters. And that hasn't happened yet. I'm not giving up on either one of those guys, but it hasn't happened yet. So all of a sudden, you've got four hitters in your lineup that you really were counting on. And all four of them, for one reason or another, in one way or another, have been big disappointments or, you know, just not delivered what you thought you were going to get. That's pretty tough to overcome.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Bernie. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
So I'm pretty set on doing another 10 years in this career if you guys will have me. But I was thinking about if I did retire and then every guy goes out and they work at Lowe's or Home Depot or something like that or Walmart as a greeter. You know what my ultimate retired job would be? and I wouldn't get hired because I'm sure they want people my age and I don't have any skill. But being on the grounds crew at Ed Bush.
Yeah. Oh, it's not fun. A retirement job.
Wouldn't that be great?
That job will kick your butt.
Yeah.
You could be,
they could give me an easy job.
Okay.
Yeah.
Be the assigned raker sweeper.
Raker? Yeah. I'm a hell of a raker.
Yeah.
You've been on the little cart.
You've been known to rake snow.
I mean, like with those guys, yes, I have. And shovel leaves.
You could work at a golf course.
I could do that.
Yeah, my dad does it. My dad's retired, and
really?
That's what he does. He loves it. He was explaining to me how they mowed the course the other day, and he was so passionate about it. It was very cute.
I just don't have skills.
See, my dad...
That's what's held me back my whole life.
My dad's retired, and his retired guy job is he drives tour buses.
There you go.
He shuttles people around.
Does he, like, head on the left? I mean, is he...
No. He's like, he'll be like, the one that you get booked for, like, the big limo bus for a wedding or for, like, the corporate people that are shuttled around from
the
event to event.
I couldn't take the drama of that.
Yeah.
Like, when bachelorette parties go south and everyone's ugly crying, I'd be crying along with them.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.